Welcome to Real Men Hug, a podcast for men and the women who love them.
I'm Ben.
And I'm Jim. Welcome to the show. I'm excited that you're here. We're excited to be here. I'm excited for this show. We looked, didn't we, for a while and couldn't find anything like this show.
Oh, absolutely not. I've been a part of some podcasts that, you know, hit certain pieces and parts of what we're doing, but not the whole by any means. Like, this is new. But I'm sure our listeners would like to know, what are we talking about when we say that? So for you, Jim, you mentioned that there's a lack of this. How would you describe this as we jump into episode one?
I feel like I need to share an anecdote to really answer that question. Jim in South Carolina, having moved far and away from anybody that he knew and loved, my wife was going through some significant postpartum depression. We had young kids. We had no community. We had no home. I wasn't sure what the next steps were or what we were going to do or how we were going to make it. It would have been so life-giving just to hear somebody else talk about their experience that they were going through. To me, that's what this podcast is. If you are sitting there on your darkest day and you don't know where to turn and you are on your knees just crying, not even knowing how to deal with these emotions that you have, this podcast is for you. There's an episode for you. And if there's not, email us and we'd love to cover those things because Ben and I have been through the ringer. That's what this show is for me, profoundly.
The official email for the show is show@realmenhug.com. One of the things that I've been paying attention to in the last year or so are suicide statistics, specifically in our area.
I feel like we probably should, if you haven't already realized this by now, trigger warning, we are going to be talking about some of that suicide stuff in this podcast. Are there other things our listeners should be aware of, Ben?
No, I would say for this episode, if that's a trigger for you, just be prepared for conversation about suicide and depression and things like that. What I've been noticing is that by and large, it's got to be close to 60%, if not more, of suicides that are reported and covered are men. And it's typically men who are in their, let's say, 30s to 60s as a broad range, sometimes younger, sometimes older. And it's just devastating because men lack a space to deal with the heavy burdens that they carry. It's just not socially acceptable in our culture for men to have big feelings. And so what happens when a big feeling continues to percolate and grow inside of you? It consumes you. There's this darkness that takes over. And in the story that I'm going to share on today's podcast, it's a prime example of exactly that.
Ben and I have known each other. It's been a hot minute, hasn't it? We've known each other since 2002. We were in the same residence hall on campus. What a blast. That was such a great experience, getting to know people and being on campus. But okay, you got this story. I know that we decided to order some Domino's, some pizza.
Yes. We were studying for finals. I think it was for Dr. Gates' biology class, perhaps. That would make sense, given the subject material of the conversation.
I remember we were just kind of giddy, and I was ready for a study break. So we ordered some pizza, and I think you got up to go to the bathroom or something.
Yes.
Like that. And so I thought it would be funny to write on my laptop, as big as I possibly could, on a Word document, "I want intercourse." I thought it would be funny. Ben comes back and I'm going to have this thing up. Well, for the first and only time ever, the Domino's delivery guy comes to our room, doesn't even knock on the door, and just walks right in. And I'm sitting there in my pajama pants.
No shirt.
No shirt, with this laptop turned around that says, "I want intercourse." And oh my gosh, I just turned beet red. I think you walked in like right behind the guy, and I was just like, oh no, abort, abort, what do we do? But, oh my gosh, I think he probably still remembers that.
How could you not? Oh my gosh.
We went to a conservative Christian college, so I imagine that was a little bit jarring for him, to say the least. But that's my first memory.
Yes, that was a good one.
Locked in there. Today we celebrated launching this podcast by eating some Domino's pizza. 20 years later. Now you've heard the story of how Ben and I met. I'm excited to hear a little bit more about your story and why we're here. Why were these two more emotionally aware guys? Why, when other people haven't acknowledged, because when you hear our stories, we should fall into that habit of stuffing those emotions and ignoring them. So why are you different?
Well, I tried that until I couldn't anymore. And that's the main point of my story. I grew up in a home and in a culture where you don't talk about deep things. You kind of sweep things under the rug. You pretend that there's no problems. You put a smile on and you just hunker down and get through the day. That was my mentality and philosophy up until Cornerstone days. I get to Cornerstone, and this is the first time that I am living away from home on my own, and it was jarring. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know how to function in this space where I go from being in a very quiet, don't really talk about a whole lot household, into this environment where we're staying in the dorm that's most known on campus for being the more quirky or eccentric dorm. I ended up there, of all places, and met Jim. Do you remember our RA, Jason?
Jason? I better let you talk about him.
Do you remember what he had on his door?
No. Your memory.
One time I walked past his room and I noticed this chart of different faces and different emotions, and it just caught me off guard. And so I stopped in my tracks and I just stood outside of his room reading this chart, and it's listing off all of these different emotions, like happy, scared, excited, sad, like all the things. And I'm looking at this and just becoming aware of how many emotions there are. And yet, in that moment, I felt so disconnected from my own emotions. And I had to really think about, what does it feel like to be sad? What does it feel like to be happy? I don't know what his reason for having that chart on his door was, but man, it just really shook me. And it's like one of those core memories that I have from college.
So you're telling me that that was really almost step one in your process of dealing with your emotions, acknowledging your emotions. Wow. So the Ben that I got to know, that was like your first step into that.
Other than my roommate who I went to high school with, you were the first friend that I met at Cornerstone. What you saw in those early days of our freshman year was a version of Ben that was brand new in the earliest days of this journey.
And you met me at the end of, I don't want to say end of, it's still something I'm working at, but I was still shaking off some of the high school arrogance, right? So even hearing that I was your first real friendship makes me feel bad, because for me, it wasn't like a, yes, I finally made a friend. You were one of many people that I knew that was there for me in a tough time. I wish I would have realized the importance of that friendship early on for both of us, really.
This is a theme that you'll catch in this episode. The other person not realizing things. So you're not alone in that. I didn't tell you or let you in on the fact that I've never really had a close friend like this. I'm kind of new to this. I just kind of faked it till I made it.
Well, you did a great job, because I wouldn't have known that you were exploring your feelings even for the first time. I always felt you to be like a mature guy who had stuff figured out.
I do agree that I carried with me a maturity that was beyond my years, but I also carried with me this mentality that people don't care that they're my first friend, or people don't care how I'm really feeling. I should just buckle down and do what I need to do at Cornerstone, go to class, get my good grades, graduate, go get a job. I don't think it's a you issue as much as it was a me issue. I didn't let you in on that. In fact, I didn't let hardly anybody in on the inner workings of my life and story.
You didn't want to let me in.
I just had a lot of words, and you summed it up in like three or four. Yes. I didn't want you in. I wasn't ready for that. But here's the thing. You persisted.
I'm glad that I could be there for you.
So that was freshman year. Summer comes, and one thing about me is that I've always been into cycling. My youth group did bike trips growing up. I've just gone cycling for fun almost all my life. It's just a thing that is so central to who I am. It was about 2 weeks after school let out. I went for a long bike ride from my house out to Lake Michigan, which is about a round trip. It would have been about 40 miles. I was coming back from the beach, and I had a collision with a motorist who was pulling out to make a right turn. I was coming at him full speed ahead on a bike path that intersected with the road he was on, and the sun was setting behind me. I ended up hitting his pickup truck and landing on my back on the ground, which then caused me to break a couple of vertebrae. I had to be in a birdcage type brace that summer.
This cast that you have, from what I remember, it started at your waist, went all the way up over your shoulders, and was it halfway down your arms?
It was not down the arms. It stopped at the shoulders.
Even if it's not true, I have this memory of you like almost stuck like this kind
Frankenstein
of, like,
kind of.
Yeah, like sticking out like you were ready for a hug.
Ah, how fitting. I was devastated. Not only was I significantly injured doing something that I loved, I also had something that I loved taken away. I was unable to be a camp counselor, which was something I was looking forward to all year. I was going to be the senior counselor because I had been there at the camp in years previous. I had written the devotionals that the kids were going to use each day. I had all these plans, and there was just so much that I was excited about that summer. That hurt deep because this was something that gave me a sense of significance, of meaning, and it was just ripped from me. There was a time where my parents are going back to work. My brothers are either going to work or just doing their summer things, which left me all alone in the house by myself. And for the first time in my life, the thought of I could just end my life certainly came to mind. And as someone who's really new to emotion and talking about emotion, that really shook me. And that was a really dark time. Thank God Jim and a couple of other people came and visited me that summer. Soon after that day where I was at a pretty low point, of course, Jim's there. So that's the nature of Jim and I's friendship.
We swoop in and help each other when we least expect it. And me blissfully unaware that I'm really making that much of an impact. I just figured you were bored.
I was, but I was also in a dark place. That's how the summer went. Also of note, in my freshman year, I came down with a crazy bacterial infection, crazy food poisoning that just ravaged my system to the point that I did spend a lot of time in the bathroom. And Jim coined a phrase. Do you remember this?
No, but I just remembered that you had gotten sick.
Yeah, that was freshman year. So all of these things are adding up to this depression and just this, like, life sucks.
Well, don't leave me hanging. What was the phrase that I coined?
You coined anytime somebody was going to go use the bathroom to take a poop in Quincer, You coined it, pulling a Crocker.
Oh, no. I hope that hit you all right, because I feel bad if that was something that you were sensitive about.
I got a good laugh out of it. Of all things to be known for, that's probably not the top of my list, but I did feel known or noticed, and it was some humor to a very dark time in life. Dealing with the infection freshman year, it carried over into the summer. It even carried over into the fall. I was still having bouts of this bacteria attacking my intestines. It's essentially like a bacterial form of colitis, and it was just not fun. I'm starting the fall semester of sophomore year with this wild infection that will not go away. I just had all of my summer plans derailed. The whole breaking my back thing and the darkness associated with that. I lost a hobby that had given me life, cycling. There was just so much taken from me that summer. That's how I'm coming into the fall semester, living in a completely different dorm. I went across campus to a predominantly freshman building. Things continued to be pretty dark, and I continued to keep some pretty high walls. As one of my professors so eloquently puts it, you can only keep a beach ball underwater for so long before that beach ball just returns to the surface and just pops out in the most inopportune time. And that's what started to happen my sophomore year. I'm trying to keep all of this stuff in, just, you know, buckle down and face it internally. But I couldn't. It was just getting to a point where it was too overwhelming. One night, I was up playing euchre with my suite mates and my roommate, and one of them said something that just set me off. It was too much. I couldn't take it. I immediately just stood up and ran out of the room, and I went in my car. I didn't know where I was going to go. I just got in my car feeling like this super heightened sense of anxiety, and I just started driving because I was angry. And in my anger, I'm just driving, not even paying attention to where I am, having some very disturbing thoughts, similar to what I experienced that summer. The thoughts this time were very specific. There were two ways that came to mind of how I could end my life. I still had my pain medicine from my bike accident. It was in the trunk of my car. I had the thought, well, I've got all of these prescription pain meds. I could just take the whole bottle and all of this could be over. That was the first thought. Continue to drive and pretend I didn't just think that. That was really dark and scary. Then another thought pops into my mind. You know, if I just accelerated as fast as my car would go and just drove off into the ditch, I'd probably die. Maybe I should try that. So these are the thoughts that are going through my head, and it was scary. I finally had enough sense to turn around and just go back to school, go back to my dorm. It was long after midnight. I wandered into my dorm, and these are the days of AOL Instant Messenger. Do you remember your instant messenger name?
I might. It's probably like one of my passwords now, though, so I probably shouldn't say it on there.
Nice. It's late. I get back to my dorm. I'm kind of freaking out. What just happened? I looked at who was online at that late hour. I think it was close to 2 o'clock in the morning. Jim was idle and was probably sleeping. That's the one time that you weren't there.
Wasn't there for you, bud.
Yeah, man.
I was like, if this is me again, I don't even remember.
Nope, it wasn't you. Because I specifically remember seeing that you weren't online and I was frustrated. But a mutual friend that Jim and I have is Rachel. And she was on. She was always a night owl, too. I messaged her and I said, this just happened. I had these crazy thoughts of ending my life, and I'm really scared. I don't know what to do with these things. she tried to calm me down, and it helped. I was able to fall asleep, and I was grateful to her for talking to me. Well, then the next morning, I woke to a knock on the door, which is very atypical in a college dorm. Typically, your dorm mates just kind of burst in. It's just what you do. I went to the door, and I opened it, and there stands John, my resident director, who's in charge of the residence hall. I thought maybe he was just there because he needed a hand with something, or I don't know. But no, he's like, "Ben, I heard that last night was rough, and I just wanted to check in with you this morning before the day started. Make sure you're okay." I just turned beet red. Somebody told him. And I was angry that he knew about my night last night, because, again, I keep things close to the chest. I don't let people in. And now my RD knows. Somebody ratted on me. I was devastated. Sheer embarrassment of, ooh, yikes. Somebody else knows about this side of me that I don't want anybody else to know about. We set a time for later that day for us to have an actual conversation, because I had to get to class and he had to get to his responsibilities. He had me sign this agreement that I would not hurt myself, and he also required me to go to the counseling office to get some counseling. He gave me a deadline to set up that counseling appointment.
I always thought it was odd, those signing something that says that you're not going to hurt yourself.
Yeah.
Like, it seems pointless to me. Sometimes right before somebody is going to end their life, they actually look and feel like they've gotten better all of a sudden. Because the thing is, when you have all of these problems in your life that there's no answer to, the minute you've made a decision, now you have an answer. It's kind of like when you're about to go on vacation, right? It's like, I just need to last a couple more days and then I get to go on vacation.
Yes.
I just always thought that was the weirdest thing, that you would sign something. I have no problem with somebody like, "Hey, are you going to hurt yourself?"
Right.
And I see your anger, but at the same time, being on the other end of it, where I was later, I was dean kind of position. So that is something that you always want to be watching out for, any kind of suicidal ideation, because you can't do anything with a dead student. You have got to catch that early. And so involving somebody in the process, I think, probably was the right thing to do, even if it felt like a betrayal at the time.
I was so mad at Rachel, because I finally figured it out. Like, I didn't tell hardly anybody. I mean, I told my roommate and I told Rachel, and I knew my roommate, he was still sleeping, so he didn't have a chance to talk to my RD. So I was like, it was Rachel.
Rachel. Sorry, Rachel. You had a reputation about telling people everything. She almost ruined my engagement. Do you remember this? And you know who told her? You. You turd. You told Rachel. That's how she found out. I asked you to do a video for me, which you bailed on, by the way.
I did?
Yes. You said, "You know, I really need to stop saying yes to everybody." And I'm like, great. I'm glad the person you decided to finally say no to was your buddy old pal, Jim.
I don't even remember that.
Not only did you sabotage my proposal video, but you also told Rachel, who then proceeded to start telling everybody. I'm sitting in an 8 a.m. class. Natalie turns around to me and she's like, "Oh my goodness, I heard it." And at that point, there were only two people that I had told, you and Sam. I had to rush my proposal. If Rachel knows, everybody on campus is going to know.
Oh, man.
I am not going to let her hear it from somebody else. I was going to propose on a Friday. I ended up proposing on a Wednesday, which I was supposed to be at a round table for being a resident assistant. And at the time, the dean never let anybody. You had to go. Didn't matter. You had to go. She let me bail. I explained it to her, and she was basically like, "Oh, Rachel knows? Oh, no, you got to propose today." So she, oh my gosh, she had come back from student teaching, and I had to like rush job put together this proposal.
Was this senior year?
It was senior year because we were engaged for like 9 months, and we got married in June. So I don't want to do math, but it was senior year. But it's your fault, just so you know. You told Rachel.
I totally don't even remember that.
You told Rachel, and then she proceeded to tell everybody. Ben, loose lips sink ships, my man. That was Rachel in college. I don't know about Rachel now, but
yes.
I'm like, I can't tell Rachel. Or if I wanted people to know something,
you tell Rachel.
Tell Rachel and everybody would know.
Or apparently tell Ben, too.
Tell Ben and he'll tell Rachel. Oh, yeah, I was upset with you about that.
Understandably so.
But
wow.
I made it work. Still married, so.
Yeah, that's huge. Both of us are.
Yeah.
Imagine that.
Big deal.
It is. That's the story with Rachel. I told her, and she told my RD, and I was very upset. In addition to signing that contract, which I don't think was very effective either, I had 5 days to set an appointment with the counseling center. I wasn't going to do it. I had no intent, no desire at all of doing that. I was adamantly opposed. I was just like, screw this. Like, what are they going to do? They're not going to follow up on this. This is just a formality. I don't need to do this. I was scared of counseling because I've got all of these emotions, a lot of dark emotion. I don't know what to do with these feelings. The last thing I want to do is go to a stranger and tell them all of my secrets and all the things that I'm dealing with. That just sounded terrible. And it felt like it was the wrong thing to do. So I felt like I was honoring myself and doing the right thing by not going. So it gets to day 5. Somehow you were aware of this time frame, and I'm not sure how you ended up in my dorm room that day, but I just remember you coming into my dorm, and I was sitting on my couch in the dorm room on this day. I'm just falling apart because I don't want to go. I've got all these emotions swirling. Well, in walks Jim, and his sole intent of being there, as far as I know, was to get my sorry ass to the counseling center. And you were dead set on making that happen. In the moment, I was pissed. I was like, just go away. Why is everybody making such a big deal out of this? Why can't people just leave me the hell alone? And so that's the state of mind I was in. I'm sobbing. And Jim just comes in, sits down next to me. You just looked at me and you're like, let's go.
You know, the funny thing about that is I'm not sure I even knew any of the details about it. In fact, I think I was thinking a totally different line of thought. I just knew that it felt like you needed counseling. I think it was you telegraphing your feelings to me that I was just like, this dude needs to go to counseling. So it's funny that I think you probably thought I was sent there.
Yeah, I really, to this day, I thought you were sent there.
Do I remember whether or not I had any prior information? That, I would say, is 50-50. I don't think so, but it's possible. But I know for a fact that I was not sent there to get you to go to counseling. I remember being very uncomfortable about feeling the compulsion to suggest counseling to you. And I was just like, no, like, that's too intrusive, or just don't say anything, it's going to be fine. And it was sort of like this voice that was like, he needs to go to counseling and you need to tell him. That I remember.
Holy cow.
I was not sent to send you to counseling.
You're kidding me. All this time, I believe that you must have caught wind through the round tables, the RD, RA stuff.
I had no idea, Ben. I don't think I even knew that you had had any suicidal ideation at that point. I don't think I knew.
Well, I thought you knew because you showed up on this day that was my deadline and we're all friends. I thought maybe Rachel told you or you heard from the RD. Like, you're blowing my mind. You had no idea.
I don't think I did. I'd be curious anything that Rachel had to say. But was you said it was John? I never even talked to him. Hmm. I came there just of my own volition. It felt like you needed to talk to somebody. my gym radar pinged.
Yeah.
And I felt like I needed to be there for you.
And you were. I thought it was like this whole thing. And I was like, fine, I'll go.
That probably felt a lot more superficial than it should have been.
No, it didn't feel superficial because I could tell you whether or not you were sent there, I knew that your motivation was solid. And I had no question about that. In fact, I think you were tearing up a little bit too. So what ended up happening, Jim was just like, let's go now.
Let's go. I remember saying, let's go.
Let's go.
With such confidence that
you did.
Like, it was happening.
Which, again, I felt like Jim's in on this great plan. Like, they sent Jim to get me to go. It's just another echo of our friendship and how we're able to read each other. Like, dang, man, I need a minute after that.
That's wild for me to hear that all this time you thought that I had somehow been sent. Listeners, I didn't know this side of the story. I this is the first time, honestly, I'm hearing it bracketed in this way. I had no idea you had already gone through all of this emotional turmoil. I just saw you hurting in that moment, and I wanted to help. I had no idea that you had been reported or anything like that.
The sense of relief that I have is just, it's a lot. That's really cool. It's just, you're a good dude.
I try.
You mentioned how you had no idea. You're not alone in that. To wrap up my story, the way I was doing life was keeping everybody out and keeping everybody at a distance. And I did a really good job. However, people started to notice that beach ball kept popping out. One of the people who noticed was my sweet mate, who was actually on the traveling admissions team with Jim and I. His name was John Butrin. And I recently asked John for his perspective on all of this, because he was there that night that I got super angry during Euchre and left. I was really surprised when I heard what John had to say in his recording.
And when Ben met me, I was very young, probably very annoying, and just kind of a bratty green freshman. So that was me. And Ben, I mean, he struck me as someone who really had it together. He was super popular. He was confident. He could just come up with ideas very quickly on the fly. So I looked up to him, and he helped me get involved in a drama group on campus, and he helped me with my audition and gave me some really good insights on how to nail that audition. And so he struck me as someone who was definitely going places, who had a solid head on his shoulders, was very creative. And I didn't actually know anything that he was really going through at the time. Back then, I mean, I knew there was a season where he did struggle with some things, and he would mention, you know, at our prayer requests that we would have that he was going through something, but I didn't know the extent of it until just recently. There would be times where I would go to talk to him in his room, and he was all dark in there, and he was on the floor with his arms outstretched listening to worship music and crying. So I knew that he was going through something. I just didn't know the extent of it. And I wish I had known, because I would have loved to have been there for him more than I was. I don't know if I was mature enough to handle something like that, but I would have liked to have known, and I'm glad I know now. But yeah, overall though, we had a really good time together in our season. We played a lot of Euchre, had a lot of really deep conversations, laughed a lot, but I'm sad that I didn't know the full extent of the burden he was carrying, and I wish I could have been there for him in a better way as a friend.
I didn't let people in on my darkness. I didn't even know that he had come into my room and seen me like that. So to hear you tonight even reference that, you had no idea the depth of what I was facing. you didn't know about the suicidal ideation. You just happened to show up at the the absolute best slash worst, depending on what frame of mind I'm approaching this from. You just happened to show up.
Isn't that bizarre?
It's totally bizarre. It changes the whole story.
Burst in like the Kool-Aid man. Oh, yeah. You want to know the really scary part about all of this, Ben? Is most people aren't as perceptive to those level of emotions, right? When you're trying to hide emotions, usually you're successful. You have to really have somebody who's paying attention. And not just that, but even is just attuned to that. The fact that someone like myself or Rachel or anyone was even around, why did I show up on that day or even the previous day that you were talking about when you had been going through some of that stuff after you broke your back? Nobody told me to go and visit you. What if I hadn't? What if you hadn't had somebody come into your life? You might not be here today. That's why we're sitting here talking. This moment right here is worth its weight. If you're listening to this, hear this and know, when you decide to hide your emotions from the people around you, the only person you're hurting is yourself. And you know what? That's not even true. You're hurting all the people around you too.
It's like, true. You're like, they want to be there for you. Like, that's what anger, like, it is a righteous anger at former Ben. Like, I'm upset with the Ben in college who had this amazing community around me who loved me. But I felt like I had to keep the darkness a secret from them. Man, like, just hearing John in his voice, I heard him, like, I wish I could have been there for Ben. It's just like, man, I wish you were. So, yes. If you are dealing with an inner darkness, if you have this unsettledness inside of your soul that just won't go away and it's gnawing at you, and maybe you are at the point of saying, you know what? F it. Life isn't worth living. I don't want to deal with this anymore. Just open up. Find one person.
Find the right person. I feel like we have to pause and say that, because there are probably people here right now. Your parents aren't safe, right? Maybe your spouse isn't safe. I think you know that, and that might be why you haven't talked to that person. But just because your parents aren't safe doesn't mean that everybody is unsafe. You need to find that person, the Jim or the Ben in your life that you feel like genuinely cares and is listening. You have to be cautious, I think, sometimes about who you share, because unfortunately, we've all been there. If you're listening to this podcast, chances are you've been there where you shared and you were hurt as a result of it. It was weaponized against you. We're going to talk about that in my story next week, about how my emotions, my feelings were weaponized against me. And so I hear you. I just want you to know, we're not naively breezing past the fact that you might not have safe people in your life, but we are safe. We may feel like we're far removed from you. We can't respond to everybody, but just know that we hear you because we've been there, maybe not in your specific circumstance, but we've been there where we felt like we couldn't go to anybody. Step one, you need to find that safe person to go to. Even if it is a counselor, or if you're religious, if it's a pastor in your life, if it's an aunt that you know has always been good to you, somebody who can keep your confidence, you need to find a safe person to talk through those issues, because it's going to eat you up. Yes. If you don't find somebody to talk to about it.
You can even dial 988 if you are in the United States, and doing so will connect you to a mental health crisis line. And that person on the other end of the phone who answers it is trained to deal with calls just like yours of, I've got this darkness. I don't have anybody I can talk to. I need help. They are trained in how to handle that. So please, if you don't have anybody, call 988. as somebody who stuffed for close to 20 plus years of my life, the relief that I started to find on the day that Jim forcefully walked me to the counseling center at Cornerstone and I met with a counselor, man, the relief was so, it was beautiful. Like, I slept so good that night after having my friend Jim walk me to the counseling center and after talking with somebody at the center. It was the very first time that I sought help, and I got it. And you can get help too. You don't have to carry this huge burden with you every day and every night. You don't need to lose countless nights of sleep over this. Just get it out. Find that person, say your piece, and let's deal with it. Let's make some progress.
You are not alone. It's okay to not be okay. If you're listening to this podcast and you're getting goosebumps because these feelings are welling up inside of you, that's your cue to find somebody safe in your life to talk about some of this stuff. If you need to cry through it just to get some of that out, find a safe place. There are people out here, your people. I hope you already have them, but if you don't, make a concerted effort to find them, because life is brighter on the other side of those friendships. When you actually engage with those feelings, you live a truer, more fulfilling life than you have ever realized up to that point. Next week, we're going to be talking about my story and how I came to be more in tune with other people's feelings because everybody around me was hiding their feelings. So I got really good at reading feelings even when people are trying to hide them. So if you're interested to know how some of that came to be, how I came to be kind of the guy that I am, and sometimes how even trauma can shape you, not sometimes, trauma shapes you into the person you are today in good ways and in bad. But I'm here talking to you guys today because of the trauma that I experienced as a kid. And I have the heart that I do for other people because of what I went through as a kid. So, you know what? God can work through that stuff. The things that are happening in your life, it's going to shape you or mold you. You can learn from it or you can let it destroy you. I want to learn. I want to grow.
And when you learn and when you grow, that gives you the opportunity to help other people too. Your pain that you're feeling right now doesn't have to be the end. The pain that you feel can be the starting point of a world of change, not just for you. Yes, the most important person to experience change is yourself. You deserve to feel the relief. You deserve to have those feelings addressed. You deserve to be seen and heard. You also deserve the joy that comes from helping somebody else down a similar path. And that is exactly what this show is about. Jim and I wouldn't have anything to talk about if it weren't for these deep, difficult moments of darkness and trauma that we've been through. Thank you. From the bottom of my heart, seriously. The fact that you spent your time listening to this episode means a lot to me. I hope that my story has an impact on your story.
Up next, we'll be hearing my story about how I came to be who I am. Going to be talking a lot about divorce and the impact that it has on a family system and how that has shaped who I am. And that segues, I think, really well into generational trauma, which is episode 3. So I'd love for you to experience my journey along the way as well. If you're excited to hop into a meat and potatoes, this episode is about generational trauma, feel free to hop over to episode 3, where we're going to be talking about how your family system can impact you and how to move on from that and how to set up boundaries. Thanks so much for coming today, and we'll see you next time on Real Men Hug.